Hey everybody, welcome to NerdWide.com presents Hero Cravings episode 14. We are back from Christmas break. We're excited.
Woohoo!
Ready to go. Right? Two of our shows are back. As always, I'm your host, Tyler Haynes, with my co-host, the man himself, Mr. Rivers.
Good day, everyone.
A little housekeeping to get us started before we break into these two action-packed episodes. Don't forget to share, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes. The more people we get out to, the more things we can do for you, the listeners. Don't forget that Chris recaps Blacklist and Blindspot at purefandom.com, so make sure you check out his weekly recaps after they air. Now, this is our 14th official episode, and let me give you a recap of how the show is going to go down. Each week, we go through all the DC and Marvel TV episodes in order as they air. We will bring you our thoughts and reactions to every episode. That being said, let's jump right on into it with the action-packed, gifted episode 11 titled 3x1. We start off with another flashback, and this time it's 2 years ago with Blink, and she just got out of a movie on a date. Her and her date are walking back to the car. They're talking about, you know, normal after-date conversations. We'll find out we're in the parking lot 2 years later ago from when everything happened. And all of these guys with white crosses on their chest kind of step out. And everybody in the parking lot's kind of like, what's going on? Now, when I watched this part, Chris, I was like, does she not have her powers yet or whatever? But then it kind of zooms in on her face and you can see her eyes.
Right.
And we're like, okay, she definitely does have her powers.
Yeah, but unfortunately for her, her power doesn't really do much to help her defend herself in a situation like that. Like, all she can basically do is run away.
Right. Because, you know, even at the beginning of this episode, we didn't know... Well, at the beginning of the season, rather, she wasn't still in control of her powers or anything like that. So this must have been, like, you know, more so when she first learned about her powers 2 years ago. Now, this group that steps out of the shadows and finds out that, you know, Blink is a mutant and everything, the white cross on their chest, they turns out they go by the Purifiers. And doing some little bit of research on this, they're a terrorist organization which are, you know, down with the mutants, and it's like an X-Men hate group. You could even refer them to like the KKK of the mutants, if you want to put it that way, you know.
Right.
It was good. I mean, I liked what they portrayed. They burnt Blink's Prius down from the inside out and was messing her car up. But what really struck me about this part of the scene and why it was so important to me, and it's kind of like a little backstory to Blink, was that her date did not defend her whatsoever. And that was one of the things Blink said. She was like, are you not going to do anything about this?
Yeah, he tells her to run.
And, you know, she runs away crying, and boom, we're back into the present. Well, you know, he's a contender for Douche Canoe of the Week, if you ask me, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a contender. I'm going to be curious to see if we get more from this organization. Maybe we find out some of them are working for Trask Industries, something like that.
Right. So we have these... We get a bunch of different groups this episode. We have the Purifiers, and then we find out the Cuckoos, you know, because we haven't seen them for 2 weeks. We haven't seen the show for 2 weeks. We come back, and they're talking to a new player. Now, we looked it up, and his name is William. I don't know how much more boring you can get other than that. We have no idea what this guy's about. We pretty sure this is the Hellfire Club, Chris. Is that where we?
Yeah, they are. They're
first
putting the.
About that?
Yeah, they're putting the Hellfire Club back together. Which is kind of, if you're familiar with the comics, it's really exciting because. All right, spoiler alert for a few people here. If you're not familiar with the comics, you probably aren't aware who Polaris' father is.
Yeah, they even mention it.
They
or later in the episode.
Yeah, well, all they mention it later in the episode is that he was like the king of the Hellfire Club.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is Magneto. So this is where we're really going to start seeing them, I think. Now, of course, the next episode we see is the season finale. But I think we're going to start seeing them setting up season two, where they're going to start introducing some people.
Oh, how did we not talk about this at the very beginning? The Gifted got, we're getting to season two.
Yeah, they've already renewed it.
Oh, we didn't even put that in the notes, Chris. Shame
yeah,
on us.
I did. I added it in.
Where? Oh, down at the bottom.
Way to pay attention, Tyler.
Oh, man, sorry. I skimmed them. I'm pretty sure those are going to be the bad guys of season two.
Well, and
what do you think, Chris?
The thing about a group like the Hellfire Club, in a way, they're the bad guy. It's kind of like Batman and Joker. So in a way, the Joker's the bad guy, but in a way, he's exposing corruption in Gotham in his own way. With the Hellfire Club, they have the same enemy as the X-Men. They're trying to wipe out the people that don't have a tolerance for mutants, whereas the X-Men are trying to show those people there's no reason to fear someone just because they're a mutant. So they're not exactly... I don't see them as exactly evil. I think they're doing things the wrong way, but they have, in a way, they're victims.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I guess you could put it like the X-Men's more of like a pacifist group.
Yeah.
And the Hellfire's really activist, if you will.
And that's one thing that this show has kind of revealed. A lot of these mutants that are causing problems would not be if they didn't feel like they had to defend themselves against groups like the pacifists or the what were they again?
the purifiers.
Purifiers and the Sentinel Services. Those groups being there are causing people to feel like they have to defend themselves, and people are getting caught in the crossfire.
All right. I mean, can you really blame the Hellfire Club, though?
No, not really. I mean, they're doing what they think they need to do to be able to live in peace, in essence.
I feel like it's the Hellfire Club and the Underground here are going to be like the two sides of the same coin, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, they kind of set that up this episode with the Cuckoos coming, you know, and asking for help and trying to do this partnership and everything. But before we get to the gist of everything, we get the ramifications of what happened 2 weeks ago when we saw the last episode was the funeral scenes. And it was really good because there was two of them. You know, one, of course, was Dreamer.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was Agent Weeks, which was Agent Turner's partner. And
right.
it was really good. I feel like they did a really good job directing, writing this whole scene with... of course, the Mutant Underground having their funeral with Dreamer, which I guess, Chris, she really is dead if we're burying her. But did we have a body?
We never saw a body, no.
Or like a casket or anything like that. Just kind of like a little structure of some sort they kind of raised and put flowers on. So we really don't know if she's still dead or not. But the scenes I thought were really good. You know, Agent Turner was like, you know, we're going to find, I forget what his wording was, and I should have found the quote of it. But it was basically like, you know, we're going to find the ones responsible for this and bring them to justice. And he didn't say kill them. He didn't say, you know, all this other stuff. But he did say bring them to justice. And it shows a lot about Agent Turner's character on the show. And I feel like out of everybody on here, he has the most developed character, developing character that we've seen. And I feel like we're going to get to a point, you know, we saw a little bit of it, you know, last episode where he was, you know, his with his wife and they were talking about this. She was like, you know, what are you doing in our daughter's name? He had a little bit more of like a revelation, but
right.
In this episode, he kind of goes against that. So I really don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I feel like his character's developing a whole lot.
Yeah. He did seem, to have some good moments, his expression. Kobe Bell plays the character, and he does a great job with these little looks that he gives that shows he's not comfortable with Dr. Campbell, for instance. He doesn't really trust him. He knows he's up to no good, but he's also got that side, that law and order side of him, that is also now trying to avenge the death of his partner. On top of his daughter. And he's trying to balance that. And so far he hasn't been too successful. I wonder if he'll reconcile some of that in the finale, or if it'll be something that plays into season two.
Right. And I really do hope I'm sure Agent Turner is going to be back for season two. Of course, you know, the finale is in 2 weeks, so we don't really, we don't know who gets killed off, who comes back, you know, type scenario. But I really do hope we have Agent Turner on there, because what I could see them doing is this season ending, it's, you know, obviously Dr. Campbell is the big bad of this season, because of what he's experimenting, and, you know, he's out for his own gain. And that's a something for Agent Turner as well, is, like, I feel like Dr. Campbell's manipulating this guy as much as he can.
Yeah.
And I'm not down for that.
No.
Not on Agent Turner.
One thing that's going to be interesting to see, too, is how are we going to, like, what alliances are going to form as the underground splits? Because it is splitting. Right.
Oh yeah, it's you know, there's like a lot, there's a lot of nods to this episode, where let's see, we did the funeral scene, the cuckoos want some help, and that was where like these alliances are starting to shift and form. Of course, the Struckers, they've talked about it all season. They're finally like, you know, is it time for us to move to Mexico? Let's pack up, let's get out of here. And of course, the kids are having a problem with this, but that aside. The cuckoos are I don't know why I always struggle on that word. The cuckoos are clearly in everybody's head as far as the underground. One side is like, let's wipe these people out. You know, they only did what we should have been doing a long time ago, which is kill off all these Sentinel Services. Again, Hellfire Club. And the other one's like, no, the X-Men, I think it was Thunderbird said it. He goes, no, it wasn't Thunderbird. It was the
Eclipse.
Yeah, he said, you know, the X-Men left this group in our hands for a reason. We're not here to kill. We're here to protect and basically, you know, show the world we're not all bad. And there's like a big line there, and I'm pretty sure Polaris is starting to fall more so. Like if they are going to keep Magneto as her father, she's starting to fall on his side, which is more on the Hellfire Club. And especially with this baby, we saw in this episode that her baby is messing with her and her powers.
It's intensifying.
Yeah, and that was awesome. The whole vault scene where she just barely moved her hand, the vault door closed. And everyone's like, what the hell? What was that? You know? Her powers are like getting black and reddish instead of her green and yellow, which is her normal colors.
Right.
So what's really going on there? What's this baby really doing to her? We don't know. It's going to be a stronger mutant, obviously, because it's just how the show goes. We also found out this... What?
She's going to be the linchpin of everything going forward, because...
Absolutely.
It's... You're going to have the personal drama, because you're right. I see her going Hellfire Club, and I see Eclipse staying with the Underground. So they're going to split, and it's going to be this battle between the two of them personally. With their kid.
Especially with a baby in the mix.
Yeah, with their kid kind of caught in the middle. Then you don't know what kind of powers the kid's going to end up having.
Mm-mm.
And she's going to be supremely powerful. Polaris, as her powers develop. So the side she falls on is naturally going to be the side that, at least in the short term, kind of has the edge in this whole thing.
Yeah. Until at least she has this baby, or especially, could you think of her and the Cuckoos teaming up together? That's not going to be a good alliance.
It's going to be interesting.
And do you think, you know, we're speaking of this divide and her being like the linchpin and everything. Do you think that, what do you think that says about the Struckers? Do you think Andy will, I feel like if anything, Andy will go with the Hellfire Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Lauren will be on, you know, the Underground.
Yeah, I think they'll both split up too. I think your mutant underground leaders are probably going to end up being Eclipse, Thunderbird, and Lauren. I think those are going to be your three as far as abilities and being able to lead the team.
Right.
And then I think Andy and Polaris and maybe a couple of the other fringe characters along with the Cuckoos will go over to the Hellfire Club.
Because we're definitely going to get some more people, especially with whoever the Cuckoo, this William guy that the Cuckoos are working with in 4. You know they've got more mutants up their sleeves that's going to be a part of this, and I'm just curious to see who it's actually going to be.
Yeah.
Now, I had a question for you, and they mentioned it in the show as well. The Struckers are all packing up. They're going to head down to Mexico, of course, where the mutant laws are a little bit more lenient towards mutants, where so the Americas are, let's contain them all and lock them up, yada, yada, yada. But it was asked, is this the best time for them to be leaving, or do you think it's the worst time possible for them to be leaving? For me, I would say worst time. Not just so much that they need the kids, but they also need their parents as well. Do you see? Like, I mean, they've just been so proactive with the underground, especially with all this happening. I feel like they should have stayed, but it was definitely they thought it was the best time, which I could see how it could have been as well. You know, everything's kind of escalating, and they want to get out of there before it gets any worse.
Yeah,
and I think they kind of saw that with the Cuckoos. Last episode.
The thing is, the parents are doing what any parent would do. They're putting their family Absolutely. First. But when your children have the abilities that theirs do, and they could be part of helping the greater good and keeping who knows how many people safe, running away
to protect each other,
right, and running away with them to Mexico and not having them get involved, that's almost douche canoe level,
right.
Like you're basically saying whatever happens to all these other people, that's fine, we're going to make sure our kids are protected no matter what goes on,
because
up here.
A lot of these other people in the mutant underground, they've lost family too, they've lost parents, they've lost kids,
right? Well, and look at what Blink lost.
Right, she's lost everything.
So, I don't really... I see where they're coming from as parents. What I wanted to see in that scene when they were trying to leave was for Andy to just go off and maybe even destroy the car and just say, we're staying. If you all get in our way, you're part of the problem.
Right. Like that was... But, I mean, we saw the divide between Andy and Lauren, though. She was...
Well,
she was okay with leaving. It seemed like she was.
I don't think she was that okay. She was kind of like, well, we can't really fight it. And then when she got there and found out her boo was there, then she was suddenly okay.
Mm-hmm. What a badass this episode with Wes.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll get to it later with the big fight scene, but. He does. You could tell he is very fond of Lauren.
Yeah, he is.
So, Trask Industries, you know, last week they got what they wanted. They are figuring out how to make mutants stronger. And what it is they combine the bloodstreams of two mutants. And in this case, this week's, they had two of them. One was... someone who could control gravity, and the other one could control motion or something like that. And combine those together, that's a pretty destructive force. And that's what they did. Dr. Campbell was like, Agent Turner, let me show you what we've got, what's the next step of the plan is. And so they go to one part of this mutant underground, which is the part where, you know, everyone's getting in trucks and shipping out, you know, to the world to get away from America. And, of course, the Struckers are there because they're trying to get to Mexico. And this, like, these two characters rip a hole in the wall. And by the end of it, it was multiple holes. And that was the coolest. That was one of the coolest scenes I think this show has done.
It was.
Like, it was such a small scene, if you ask me. But So we find out that the Hound program is stronger if you mix your bloods, which is kind of, sort of, what Fenris is with the Struckers.
Well,
and I thought it was kind of cool with Andy, who was getting pissed off, but he was drawing, and it was a picture of a wolf.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to see Fenris 2.0.
Oh, yeah, but, we'll definitely see that.
Oh, I can't wait. So, it's the signal's really cool. We find out that, you know, how did the Dr. Campbell and his team find out about this mutant underground facility? Well, we find out it's the Cuckoos tipped off Trask. And I'm just like, oh, you know?
Right.
Come on. But they were doing it to advance the Hellfire Club. They were doing it to advance this divide between the underground and all of the underground, because they don't want Andy and Lauren to escape, pretty much is what I gathered from this too. They wanted them to, you know, to help them on their side, which again, like we talked about earlier, I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's a case where the Cuckoos were not working against the underground. They're trying to set things up to bring what they hope to do is bring the underground into the Hellfire Club.
Right.
And then they're going to go after the Sentinel Services and anyone else that wants to do mutants harm. The Cuckoos, we've talked about this earlier before we started recording. I love the scenes with them because Skylar Samuels is the one who plays that part. And I first saw her over in the first season of Scream Queens on Fox. But the way that they work that, where they have them finishing each other's sentences and sometimes two or three of them talking at the same time, is just creepy.
Oh, absolutely. It's like eerily creepy.
And it works so well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and like shout out to David Straighten, the director of this one.
Right.
Like that was worked together so well. And that's, to me, and of course, I don't know anything about film. I don't know anything about recording and filming a show. But the way that he had this one actress, like we said, Skylar Samuels, but to have her play three different characters at one time in three different locations, like on the screen,
right,
that shows a lot of a vision by the director and the filming crew and the editing crew. And that just blows my mind. I love scenes like that, especially when it's just one person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
So, I mean, kudos to them.
But
their creepiness and their blue eyes and whatnot.
It is. It's really creepy. I think too, though, one thing with this and the whole idea of the Hounds, they're just, I kind of think Trask is going to be undone by its own ambitions.
Right.
You can't just randomly start combining powers. And that's what that allows them to do. I have a feeling at some point that's probably going to backfire on them. Like they'll test it out in the lab and it'll seem fine. And then once it gets out there and it kind of gets out of their control, I think they're going to run into some problems.
Yeah. I don't, let's see. That's what the thing too. Like at the end of this episode, of course we get Trask and Agent Turner talking to him. I'm assuming the Secretary of State or Defense Secretary, somebody in the, you know, in the government.
Right.
And they want to bring the Hound program international, not just America, but everywhere. And of course they showed them this operation and how many people they captured and what they did and stuff like that. But I don't know, man. That just, I feel like they're trying to reach too far. They're trying to run before they can walk. You know, if I was a bad guy, I understand what they're doing. They want more money. They want to control this and everything. But I'm so confused about Agent Turner's flip-flopping.
Yeah.
You know, last week he was, you know, let's get all these mutants out of here. They're going to be in my custody now. And they're like, oh, crap. Well, another bad mutant killed all these people and almost killed me. Now I'm back with you, Agent Campbell.
Yeah, it's almost, and again, we understand the baggage of the character, right?
Right.
He's... You got to sympathize with him from that perspective. But it's just like any other group of people. You're going to have a lot of good ones, but you're going to have a few bad ones. And what he's doing is generalizing and stereotyping an entire group of people just because of the actions of a few bad ones.
Yep.
And at some point, that's got to pay off, if not in the finale, maybe at some point in season two. I think you're going to see him. I think he'll stay in his job if he's one of those characters that survives. But I think he'll flip. I think he'll be almost like an inside source.
I kind of hope so, man, just because it's like, I feel like if you sat down Agent Turner, Thunderbird, Eclipse, well, I guess just Thunderbird and Eclipse, and then, her name is, let me find it for you. She's in every episode. The kind of like the tech person of the whole underground.
Oh, yeah,
She's in all of them.
Oh.
I know, I'm looking too, because she's in, actually, I'm going to go to the full cast. I had her name before we started talking about this. Yeah, Sage. She's in every episode, and
I want her to have a bigger role, because I feel like there's a lot we don't know about that character.
And I think with Dreamer down, we might have her step more into the scene as well. But I mean, she's been in every episode, and I feel like she's some sort of the brains behind it as well. And I feel like if you sat down these group and were like, you know, why are you this way and why are we this way type scenario? You know, don't have Polaris in there because she's obviously got a personal vendetta against all of it, which, again, understandable, but she's going to be part of the Hellfire Club. I feel like Agent Turner will see things differently. And I thought that point was going to be last week with sitting there talking with his wife and his wife finding out what he's doing. But I don't know, man. Do you have anything else for this episode?
No, not right now.
Well, early numbers, 0.7 rating, down 0.1, and 2.54 million viewers, which is down 0.24. Again, if you want to know what these numbers are, check out our episode uploaded last week titled Special Number 1 Ratings and Reviews. Did you like that, Chris? That was a nice little pitch, huh?
Oh, yeah, perfect.
So we're not back with The Gifted for 2 weeks, but in 2 weeks we have the finale, and the first episode is titled Extraction, and then the actual finale is titled Crossroads. Really excited for this,
or
especially since they got renewed for season two.
Or X-Roads, if you look at the way they wrote it.
I'm assuming it's Crossroads, and you know they had to put the X in there somehow.
They're going to have to start getting creative with stuff like that, because you know, right, we've said before, you're going to eventually run out of words with X in them.
Yep, and I think they've got it under control. All right, next show and our last show for this week is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., episode 6 of season 5, titled Fun and Games. And this one, again, was directed by Phil Coulson himself, Clark Gregg, and he did such a great job. And you could definitely, following these people on Twitter and seeing the reactions to the fans and to their fellow co-stars and writers and everything is really kind of enlightening. And I love seeing Clark Gregg have such a good episode handed to him to direct. And he went really well done. Good job, Clark Gregg. That's me clapping for you, sir. Good job.
It was a really good episode.
Yeah, this was a great one. And, you know, of course, coming back 2 weeks later for this one as well, Enoch and Fitz are teaming up still. I love it. I love Enoch. We find out Fitz's character is like a marauder, a space pirate type thing. He's got unlimited wealth was his character's thing, and that's what he's here to do. He was here to buy the World Destroyer Quake. Of course, there's a bunch of cool scenes with Fitz, and I love the acting by I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name. Ian, even though he had his birthday last week as well.
Really?
Happy birthday to you if you're listening. But the acting for him this episode was really good, because like we've seen him in different characters, different roles, and I feel like his time in the framework, there it is, I feel like his time there kind of helped him for this role that he was playing. It was like a douche, you know, like a real douchebag,
right?
But it was really cool, and the way he manipulated Cassius was really cool throughout this episode. But we Fitz walks over to a table where a servant girl, Simmons, was serving food, and he's sitting there having this heartfelt speech. And ultimately, at the end of it, proposes to him. Of course, he doesn't know she can't hear him. And so, like, he said all this good stuff. He was like, you know, he said, screw this curse that's against us. Let's get married. I want to marry you, and will you marry me type stuff. And, of course, she can't hear any of it, which this plays out later in the episode. So keep that in mind.
It was so sad. It was so sad because the whole time I'm sitting here thinking, dude, she has no idea you're even talking to her.
Right. But, you know, it's the Fitz and Simmons curse.
Yeah.
We find out Cassius, we talked about several episodes ago on this show that Cassius is doing pterogenesis for 18-year-olds. Well, this episode, he's stepping the timetable up. We find out he's trying to prove to his father he's not a screw-up. It's a whole big father and son ego thing that is ultimately what's playing out here. And, of course, later in the episode, we find out more about that. But so he's putting kids through pterogenesis early. And Flint, which is a friend of Tess's from, you know, this whole time, he's been trying to make a living, selling things, and all this other stuff. Find out, I think he was 16. He goes, I still have 2 years until I'm even supposed to be going through this.
Yeah.
And his parents were dead, so he didn't really have anybody but Tess.
So let me ask you
it's
this.
It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about this 2 weeks ago when we saw Rose again. Right?
Right.
She's a child. She's an inhuman. So she's been through pterogenesis. And I asked at the time, so who put her through? Because we know from the Inhuman show that they were waiting till age 18. Well, now we find out here that Cassius is waiting until age 18. So that made me wonder, is there someone who has told Cassius in the past, you have to do this at age 18? Is there someone from Adelan who was part of that society who we just haven't seen
in
yet?
In-depth thinking.
I'm just curious. I'm a curious boy.
Where do these rules come from for age 18, you know?
Yeah, I mean, is it just something, you know, because they talk about, with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they talk about a myth, a prediction from whoever. And is there a book that this was written down in? Is that how they know about waiting till age 18? Or is it something that someone from that society told them about?
Oh, man, see. It was a good episode, and we find out that Flint is actually an Inhuman, because, of course, you're not just going to bring some random character in here and have him do such a good role. Actually, that character who played Flint, Coy Stewart, I know him from... never mind. I thought he was in the sci-fi show Van Helsing. Not him. Ignore me.
Okay.
But you know, they don't randomly just put kids and people in the show and not just have them mean something.
Right.
And he went through pterogenesis. He's got powers. We find out later in the episode that he could control, I'm assuming, rocks in the earth, so to speak.
Yeah, probably minerals.
Yeah. And so, but you know, that happens. He goes through pterogenesis, and we come back to Cassius and this whole bidding on Quake and this spectacle, these fun and games, if you will. Put the title of the episode in our talk. But it was, we see Cassius is, his family is all in power. It's Cassius, which is the pretty much the lowest, his older brother, and then his father. And his father gave all the power to his older brother. And Cassius was kind of, he didn't say he was cast out, but like everyone assumes he was. And he's trying to prove himself.
Yeah, he was given the earth to run.
Right. Which is pretty crappy.
Well, which makes me wonder, what are they running? You know, like, what planet are they based on? Where are they at?
And I still feel like that has something to do with my theory that, because they call Quake the destroyer of worlds, plural. You know?
Right.
So I wonder if It is plural if it's just the Earth that we're talking about. But our first matchup of the night was Agent Melinda May versus Ben the Mind Reader, while Fitz has the best seat in the house right beside Cassius, whispering in Cassius's ear the whole time. And I thought this scene was actually really cool because you could tell the whole time that Ben knew that Agent May and Fitz were friends, and he was relaying information to them the whole time.
Yeah.
And which ultimately Agent May lost because Ben can read everything she's about to do.
Well, she had one moment. She had one moment where she got a good blow in, and when he looked at her, she said, "Didn't think, just acted."
Right.
And yeah, that was a great little.
The mess shows how much of a badass Agent May is, but we already know that.
Yeah.
Duh. Fitz tells Cassius, because Agent May loses, he said, he goes, he was bored. He says, just send her to the surface of the planet. And I'm going to let you know why I think this is important. And this is what went through my head. And I don't think they really touched on it. It might be next week's episode. But if you send her to the surface, of course, that's where all the roaches are. Everyone's like, oh, you're not going to survive long. But we know that this rebel organization is on the surface of the planet. But we also know Enoch has his own spaceship. What's stopping him from going down to the surface and picking up May?
Right.
And well, that's what I was thinking of.
And based on what we saw near the end of the episode, that may be what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because
That's right. Because he said
the
Kree that he was sunken to.
Yeah, he gets in the
elevator.
So
nobody ever comes back from there.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that towards a little bit later on because I had no idea what that was about. Oh, that makes so much more sense. We come back after that fight. Ben, they're auctioning off Ben, the mind reader, the inhuman mind reader. And Cassius is actually like, nope, this guy is actually not for sale anymore. And everyone's like, what? Cassius found out that May is also from the future and that Quake and his servant were lying to him with Ben's help. And Cassius is like, nobody who serves me is a liar and lies to me to my face. And Ben gets killed. Did not see that coming.
He got killed too.
I thought it was rough.
Yeah, in a very painful way.
Yeah, with some metal balls straight to the chest.
Yeah. I can't.
I'm sorry.
There's no other way to say it. You know, so.
Right. Oh. That was rough. And Quake, Chloe Bennett, he talks to her and says, he goes, it's okay. It's going to be all right or whatever. And then just gets destroyed by Sonara.
Yeah. But then your favorite part of the entire episode, I'm guessing, comes up.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we find out about... Oh, man. So we get to the part where Flint is with, you know, our agents, Coulson, Mac, and Yo-Yo, and they're at Grill's little base, and they're talking about how they're from the past and everything like that, and that Yo-Yo's got powers, and that Flint's got powers, and Grill comes in and goes, oh, this will be good money, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to tell the Creed. He said he's going to be rich, and he's not going to worry about his life anymore because he's going to turn all these people over. But, Flint gets mad. Of course, we haven't seen his powers yet. He gets extremely mad and, you know, starts throwing rocks around. And like we talked about earlier, he's probably control over minerals or some sort.
Yeah.
So he's throwing these rocks around. And Grill's pointing a gun at him. He goes, if you do that one more time, he goes, I will put you down. And it just made him angrier. And Yo-Yo's like, you know, you're in control of these powers. They're not in control of you. So he makes a giant ball of rock and kills Grill. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Flint, and your weird rock mineral powers. Thank you. I was so excited that Grill was put down just because his character gets on my nerves.
So,
and his character got on my nerves in Heroes Reborn as well. But to finish this story up, we haven't seen Tess a whole lot since the Kree were looking for her to find out where Flint went throughout this episode. We come out into the little common area, and we find out Tess was killed.
Yeah.
And so we've got two deaths, I mean, for the good guys. So Tess and Ben were both taken out in this one episode, and I was like, oh, man. And I liked Tess a lot, but I felt like she should have had a better send-off. You know, like even Ben, he wasn't even as much as Tess was, and he got a better send-off, I felt like, than Tess did. That might just be my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from. It would have been something more if she had, you know, taken a death blow from a Kree trying to help the agents escape or right. something like that. Instead, we just see her body dangling. And it wasn't exactly a hero's exit.
No, we're getting really dark with these episodes, I feel like, as far as like what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has used to be, you know. Like, we're getting some good deaths, we're getting some deeper meanings behind a lot of the things.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it, and I feel like it's just been really well done. So the fight scene we've all been waiting for comes up. It is Quake versus Sonara, which the fight scene was really cool. You know, Quake comes out looking like a good old Jedi, looking just like a BA. She even tweeted out last night. She says, the only time I'll get to dress like a Jedi and be on TV. But a big thing about this episode was that Kasaya's brother comes in.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I want to see this world killer that you have. Before he came into the show, Fitz and Simmons and Quake were all planning this way to get out and to escape the clutches of Kasaya's. Fitz kills Kasaya's. I'm assuming he killed him. Is that what we're going with here?
Yeah, it looked like it because he took a knife and just slashed his throat.
His throat.
So he may not be dead. I'm sure that's
Fitz didn't kill him. It was Simmons.
That's right. That's right.
So
Excuse me.
Fitz had the little the shield sleeper guns.
Yeah, I remember the knife. I just misremembered who had it. Yeah. But he may very well be dead. I think he's the sort of person they're going to have to kill off at some point. So why not then?
Yeah. And then of course the team is back together. The fight scene between Quake and Sonara, it was good. A lot, really action-packed. It was really cool seeing the powers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Sonara is not dead. She's just gassed by the shield gun.
And a few of Daisy's quakes.
And a few of Daisy's quakes, of course. End of the episode, Simmons proposes to Fitz, and their interaction between that was so funny.
Aww.
They were walking down the hallway, and he said, you know, I actually proposed first. And she's like, oh, yeah, of course you did. He was like, no, really, I just didn't know you couldn't hear me. And she was like, oh, yeah, of course you did.
So before we leave the episode, I have a theory.
Uh-huh.
Another one.
Okay.
Your
theories are usually right. Continue. I'm going to write this down in my notebook. So
oh, are you? Oh, wow. So now I'm going to be held to it. Okay, so they're calling Daisy the Destroyer of Worlds.
Right.
So with what we've seen from Flint's power, what if he's the Builder of Worlds?
Mm.
He can bring all that space rock back together.
Right.
So what if he and Daisy work together and end up putting the Earth back together?
Ooh, see, that would make sense, because that's how you could save the future. Because Enoch is all about preserving the humanity, the humans
right.
and humanity, you know?
Right.
And that's why he's back in the future. I like it,
just,
Chris.
Just a thought.
Just a thought. That's smart. I'm putting down Destroyer of Worlds and Flint to put the world back together. It's officially on my list.
Woohoo!
Now, of course, next week's episode is Together or Not at All. And like the episode portrays, I did watch the preview for this one. The team is finally back together. Besides May, because she's on the surface. But I'm pretty sure Enoch is going to be the one that helps her out now with your other theory of where he went.
Yeah.
Early numbers, 0.7 rating. Up 0.1 from 2 weeks ago. And then 2.48 million viewers, which is down 0.02. Still, like, both of these shows this week held some great numbers.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where it goes from here. Clark Gregg, again, did an excellent episode directing this week, and I can't wait to hopefully see more of you directing the show.
Now,
Chris?
Huh?
Go ahead.
Well,
you were about to say something.
I wanted to say one quick thing about this show, and I know we've harped on it before. I feel like this season would be a good time for them to bring someone in from the rest of the cinematic universe.
Right.
Since they're in space, maybe have Gamora make an appearance.
Yeah, like have someone not so big, but like a sub-character. Ooh,
yeah, I mean,
would you...
personally, me, because, I mean, you know I'm a fan of the actor. I would love to see Michael Rooker show up as Yondu.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think if they started doing that again, because they did it a little bit at the beginning of the series,
mm-hmm.
viewership would tick up because people would think, oh, wow, they're really working to tie this in instead of what they've done previously is they tie it into what's going on in the films, but they don't, it's not like a direct tie-in. It's more of,
right.
Well, they mention the fallout from the latest Marvel film, and then they adjust their paths accordingly.
Now, I feel like if before you did that, you would have to somehow put the Inhumans in this show.
Yeah.
Because I feel like before you jump to something that big, you need to jump to something a little bit smaller. And I know, I don't like how they've gone away with what's, you know, crossing over. Because, of course, we saw, what's her name from Sith, Lady Sith from Thor in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a couple of episodes. You know, of course, they were the cleanup crew from Thor, The Dark World, the second one. I feel like they've gone away from trying to keep it in the MCU. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, I mean, we've had Thor Ragnarok. We've hardly said anything about that, which, I mean, again, it's all in space. So what can you say about that? But I don't know, man. I feel like something's got to happen.
I would like to see them do. I mean, even if they tied it into Inhumans only, you know, maybe have Lockjaw bring Karnak over to help him devise the perfect plan. You know, something to that effect. But
what if they're the ones on the surface?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ooh. Theories on theories on theories, Chris.
There you go.
All right. It is time for the fan favorite segment, the douche canoe of the week. Chris, who has the honor this week?
Well, this week we only had the two episodes, so it was a little bit light. And there really wasn't one in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, I couldn't. I mean, you could have said, like, Grill, potentially, Cassius, maybe his brother, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, Grill made up for it by getting killed, so.
Yeah, thank you, Jesus. Or Flint, whoever you want to talk to.
So I say we go with Dr. Campbell.
Absolutely.
I think he's...
Hopefully...
This is his second time, I think.
I think this is third.
Is it his third?
Second or third.
We need to start keeping track of that.
Yeah, because he's... I'm going to have to go back through and listen and keep tally. But... Dr. Campbell he's all about power. He's all about wealth. We really don't know his end game or why he is the way he is. Like, there's no backstory for Dr. Campbell.
No, I feel like they need an episode, you know, similar to the one that we got with Papa Strucker's father. We need something like that from Dr. Campbell just to sort of explain in depth
why he is the way he is.
Yeah, his entire background.
Right.
That would be perfect. Or they could do something like, I think Heroes used to do it, where you would have the weekly shows, and then they would have these little short animated mini episodes online that you could get more character development that they couldn't.
Well, that's what the CW does with the CW Seed.
Yeah.
Like with Vixen and some of their characters. Of course, it's all the same voice actors that played their characters.
Right.
Oh, Chris, fund it. Let's start a GoFundMe, and we're going to fund that.
Or we could just, you know, mention it to
you. Listen here, Fox.
Yeah, there you go.
/ Disney / Marvel. We got some ideas for you. That we want to interview some people. Chris, what was your favorite episode?
It was tough. It was a hard decision.
Absolutely.
I went with The Gifted. Just
good one.
It seems like we're really ramping it up now with, you know, especially looking at the previews next week. The X-Men seem to get mentioned a lot. We're starting to get more of that. Maybe we're going to get some more characters introduced. Polaris's pregnancy, her powers developing.
Yeah, I'm real curious about this Hellfire Club.
Yeah, the Hellfire Club.
What we're doing with it.
What's going to go down with Agent Turner in the finale. All of this, it's all bubbled up to this point, and this was just a really good episode to set up the finale.
I can't wait. I kind of hate that we have to wait 2 weeks for it, but makes it just that much more exciting, especially coming off of a 2-week break.
Yeah.
I'm going to say my favorite episode was S.H.I.E.L.D. I loved Fitz. He's probably my favorite character on the show, regardless. Him and Quake. And it was good to see their interactions. It was good to see a little bit more backstory with Cassius. Of course, it's probably my favorite episode because Grill got killed. Don't like that character. I'm glad they went away with him. We saw some more Enoch. And a couple cool battles and fight scenes.
Yeah.
So definitely S.H.I.E.L.D. for that one. Do you have anything else, Chris?
I know we're about to get to our usual contact info at the end of this. I want to ask people, too. Feel free to contact us with your theories. You know, we always throw our theories out there. Contact us with yours.
What's your theory?
Yeah, and that goes for any week. We need to get fewer interaction up here because we're going to start. I think I'm going to come up with some things that people can email us about. Little polls we can do and things like that.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Like, we even talked about doing a mailbag.
Yeah.
Like, send us your questions every week.
Absolutely.
Or if it's something like we missed, you'd be like, hey, what do you think about this? You know, you don't really talk about it. What do you think about blah, 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 blah.
Or if you want
to. That'd be a lot of fun.
Or if you want to tell us how stupid we are, or how great we sound, or.
Yeah. Or how terrible our theories are. Me. We're also, don't forget, I meant to put this in the housekeeping. We are going to be doing every other Friday, starting with this Friday, we are doing NerdWide's podcast. And it's just going to be me, Chris, and our other buddy who works for NerdWide, JT. We're each going to bring our own topic to the show, just drink around and talk about stuff and just have some fun. So be looking forward to that every other week, starting this week. That is our New Year's resolution. We are also starting our OWL podcast. Hopefully that is the Overwatch League's breakdown of the eSport. And that's going to start coming out on Mondays. That should be every Monday. That's it for this week. I mean, we only had two shows. Next week, we're only going to have S.H.I.E.L.D. because Gift has taken a 2-week break. But in 2 weeks, everything starts back up besides Legends of Tomorrow. And we've got Black Lightning, which... in 2 weeks, we'll actually talk a little bit more about it. We got some great news, that stuff that happened this week as far as NerdWide, to bring you better resources and better things. You could thank Mr. Rivers for that. But you'll have to stay in the not know-how for 2 more weeks until we discuss it. But like I said earlier, this is it for this week. Make sure you review and share us around on iTunes and social media. And, you know, just get the word out. We want more interaction. We've got a good subscriber count. I want to keep it going up. I want to, at the end of the year, minimum, Chris, I don't know what your, you know, you could say New Year's resolution is, but I would love to have minimum 100 subscribers by the end of the year to Hero Cravings, that is. I think we're sitting at 25.
Just 100?
Yeah, I mean, I like to aim low.
I want to have a million by the end of the year.
God, do you know how many?
World domination.
Okay, here we go. All right.
Call me Stewie.
Make sure to follow. Make sure you follow NerdWide at Twitter at nerd_wide. You can follow me, the man, at Ty_Haynes, and Chris Rivers at MavTN7. Make sure if you do follow us and you come from the show, let us know where you come from. Give us a little bit more of your interaction. We'll talk to you, hang out, and your opinions and theories could even end up on the show. As always, I'm your host, Tyler Haynes, with the mad mutant himself, Chris Rivers, and we cannot wait to share our thoughts with you next week.
Bye, everyone.